This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantal Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting WindroseRecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Preeta Ji, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
In the Santa Monica Mountains, Her Escape Vortex offers a unique and truly fantastic setting for your next spiritual retreat. The Lavender Garden, the fire pit overlooking the Topanga Canyon sunset, and the Moroccan-furnished yurt on this magical property provide the atmosphere for an inspiring and transformative experience. A sacred place ideal for yoga and wellness retreats, as well as cleansing and healing ceremony of all kinds, Her Escape Vortex is part of a community of people eager for personal and spiritual growth. Visit thepathtoauthenticity.com/Her Escape Vortex or click on the link in the show notes for more information.
Hi, authentic listener. My name's Lane Kennedy. I'm the host of Recover Like a Mother, a podcast dedicated to calm living. It's also dedicated to mothers in recovery. I want to invite you to episode 24. Yes, a very special episode, 24. It's a meditation created to get you aligned with your inner resource. And I know you're not here to do that today, to get aligned with your inner resource. You're here to connect and to listen to my friend and your host, Tom Gentry. Tom is an incredible human being, and he has this uncanny ability to connect with others. And that is why he and I are such good friends. I'm so fortunate to be able to share the podcasting space with him and so grateful that we have the opportunity to share with you. So enjoy his show, The Path to Authenticity. Come on over and listen to Recover Like a Mother when you have time. Take good care.
If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. Episode 145 for October 12th, 2021. Still have room in my Path to Purpose workshop, which meets for 8 weeks, 8-hour-long groups that meet on Saturdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Google Meet. If you're someone who's looking for a little direction in life, it's a great way to connect with a group of like-minded people who are all looking to be the person they were always meant to be. Can find more information about that through a link in the show notes. Got a few spots. Join us. Starts Saturday the 16th. This is a special episode. I want to thank friend of the show, Gina Maffa. She's a therapist in Manhattan who's been on the show a couple times. Again, I'll leave links in the show notes for those episodes. But she's the one who connected me with this guest, Sri Preetaji, who is the co-author with her husband, Krishnaji, of the book, The Four Sacred Secrets for Love and Prosperity, A Guide to Living in a Beautiful State. I'm going to let Preetaji tell you about her. But I just loved having this conversation with her. I don't really know what else to say about it. It just very touching to me. And I'm very, very grateful to have had the opportunity to talk to her. So I hope you enjoy it. I think you will. Here you go. Sri Preetaji. You're very calming. I'm usually the one who hears that about myself, but you heard, I just, after listening to you and the cadence with which you said that, it prompted me to just take a deep breath and lower my shoulders, which I love. What a great effect to have on other human beings, that is.
It's truly beautiful, Tom. Actually, to see somebody else relax in your presence, it's very calming in itself.
It is. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this with me. Welcome to the podcast. And I just want to let you know how honored I feel to be able to talk to you today. Thank you.
So wonderful to be with you, Tom, and it's truly great to be speaking to you on this very special topic, authenticity.
So for someone who knows nothing about Preetaji, how do you describe yourself?
I would say that I am a philosopher, a spiritual teacher. I do this work along with my husband, Sri Krishnaji. We are a couple doing this work. And our vision is to help individuals move from a state of suffering to a state of no suffering. To help individuals move away from separation and disconnection to an experience of connection, and to help individuals move from divisiveness to experiencing oneness. This is the vision that we have for everyone whose life we touch. And we believe that when an individual is capable of living free from suffering, that is when an individual is able to truly connect. And that is when that individual is able to truly contribute to the world.
Hmm. You and your husband have written a book about this, which came out in 2019, I believe.
Yes.
Which you were kind enough to send me a copy of. Thank you for that. And the more I've read, the more excited I've become to talk to you. And your folks asked me to focus a little bit on the second chapter, which talks about inner truth and the inner divide. And this is something that in my life I have been particularly focused on, this idea of being at war with oneself. And it's something that I have struggled with in my life. And my own personal path to authenticity, it has been a process of ceasing to wage war against myself. You know, I feel like so many of us, especially in the Western world, are so consumed with what we think we should do, what other people tell us we should do, how we do feel rather than how we think we should feel. It's just all this inner turmoil. And what excites me about it is what could be possible if we can channel all of that energy to loving ourselves. And one way of saying it is waging war on behalf of ourselves rather than with ourselves, or just channeling the energy in the interest of being at peace, I guess, living in a beautiful state, like you talk about, to put down our weapons and stop waging war, right?
Absolutely, Tom. If you have to speak something from an Indian perspective, I would like to take this character in one of the epics. His name is Ravana. He's called Ravanasura. So this character, he's a very pious, very religious. He performs a lot of rituals. He takes care of his mother very well. He's an able warrior. He's a great king. But this character is not the hero of this epic or the story. This character is the villain of the story. If you look at how this character is depicted, he is a person with 10 heads. I don't think he had 10 heads. He lived with 10 heads. But what I see is, this man must have lived with conflicting ideas, with conflicting ideals, with conflicting desires, conflicting values. And it is that conflict, that inner divide, that made him become a villain and not a hero. When an individual is torn between who he is or who she is and who she should be, that inner divide actually makes you perform those unwise actions. And when you look at life of everyone, they are struggling with that divide. It is like being pulled in two different directions. You want to be this, but you are this. Your value is pulling you in one direction. Your ideal is pulling you in one direction. The inputs that you have from your society, from the religion, is pulling you in one direction. And that inner conflict actually makes you live in a state where you are constantly judging yourself. And it is a very painful experience to be living in constant judgment about oneself, right, Tom? It's a very unpleasant, uneasy experience of life.
I know you've worked with hundreds of thousands of people. Probably millions of people have heard you lecture at this point. Is there a part of the world where you feel like people struggle with this more than others?
Not really, Tom. The thing is, it starts off because our very society is very different. In the sense, when we are very young, or even as we grow up, we don't grow up as isolated beings, right? We are in constant interaction with the world, with our parents, with the school, with the society, with the religion, with the friends, with the teachers. And we have so many inputs flowing into us. And all these inputs that has been flowing into us has at some point probably crystallized in our own minds as to who we should be. So there is an image of a perfect self as to who you should be that is crystallized in your mind. It could be your religious inputs. It could be moral and ethical inputs. It could be inputs based off on how a family should be or how you should be. all these inputs are in you. And you are supposed to be all of this. And you're constantly measuring yourself against these inputs. That is the reason for the conflict and the divide that you experience within oneself. I wouldn't say it is regional. I wouldn't say it belongs to one particular geographic area or one particular conditioning or religion. It is spread all over the world. It is the same everywhere.
That's interesting because my perception would be that we in the West have a more difficult time with these things because I don't know, from my limited experience and understanding of Eastern thought as compared to Western thought, I guess I see a lot more judgment from my perspective in Western thought than I do in Eastern thought. But it's refreshing to hear you say that because ultimately we're all the same, aren't we?
The human experience is the same.
Our suffering expresses itself or manifests in different ways, maybe.
Actually, as you say about Eastern thought and Western thought, originally, Eastern thought, as you said, is something that moves you towards accepting life. Actually, if I can take an allegory from the temple, I don't know if you've been to India. Have you been to India at all?
I have not.
Oh, you should be there. And it's a whole new experience altogether. If you are in India at some point, and if you're in south of India, if you go to a temple, a Hindu temple, it has a huge tower, actually. Before you enter the temple, you enter through a tall tower. And on the tall tower are sculpted various images. And as you go to a temple, you would imagine that these are like all auspicious images that will be on the tall tower. But the truth is, it is not so. In the tall tower are images of gods, goddesses, sages living in transcendental states, experiencing profound awakening. You have ordinary people. You'll have a mother, a sculpture of a mother combing her child's hair. You will see images of gods and demigods and demons with pot bellies. You would see all these images. Actually, what happens is, and you're supposed to see, originally you're supposed to look at all these images and then go into the sanctum where you get connected to the divine or to your God. But when you look at all these images, what you have to observe is everything is life. It is just not the beautiful, the good, the sagely that you see in the temple tower. You see everything. It is a reminder that life is everything. And you observe it. You observe that everything is arising in you, internally also. It is just not the beautiful, the wonderful, and those profound states. There is experiences of anger. There are experiences of fear. There are experiences of hate. If you're able to observe it rather than being caught in it or indulging in it, that is when actually you can get in touch with your true essence.
Hmm. Well, I think in my life, what I have seen a lot of, I like to talk about emotion a lot and our relationships with our emotions, because I feel like that is an enormous opportunity for us to grow as human beings. And I think especially men, and especially Western men, we're taught to resist our emotions. We're taught to pretend that they don't exist at all, which is absurd. Of course they exist. But the more that we resist them, that is what is exhausting about the experience. That's another example of us being at war with ourselves. And one of the things that I have learned, I think we especially try to resist the emotions to which we attach a negative value. Sadness, for example. But when we resist our emotions, we don't just resist one emotion. We resist the entire emotional experience. So if I'm depriving myself of sadness, I'm also depriving myself of joy. And we can't know one without the other.
Yes, Tom. Either resisting an emotion, how do you resist one? You basically run away from it. Or you philosophize emotion, saying that, you know, life is all, it is life, it's okay. Or you try to replace that emotion with something nicer by doing something fun, see? You're feeling internally sad, but you then go out for a party and you stop feeling it. You stop experiencing it. You stop expressing it. And it actually builds within you. And it becomes a disease, I would say, what I would say is a disease in consciousness. Not that it has left you. Not that you are free of sadness. But in the entire process of trying to repress it or trying to escape from it, you are, what you're doing is you're covering up your wound under a carpet and you're allowing that wound to become more sore. That is the entire process that is causing an individual to continue being in that state of suffering. The entire resistance to suffering, the resistance to pain is suffering. Not wanting to feel that is suffering. A lot of effort goes in it, right? When you're not wanting to feel or experience what you're feeling.
Absolutely. It is painful. And we make it more difficult for ourselves by engaging in that. And that's where, from a mindfulness standpoint, you talk about observing it.
This is a differentiation that I teach people all over the world. You know, problems are different from suffering. Problems are external challenges or external uncomfortable situations. And everybody, every species goes through challenges in life. But it is very unique to human species that we internalize an external problem, which I call the internalizing the external problem is that is suffering. And one remains in that state of suffering for a very long time. People continue to live in a state of suffering long after that problem has actually happened. People I have met, I have seen, who live in state of suffering for many, many years together over something that has happened 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It continues to linger in one's consciousness if you have actually not weeded it out of your consciousness. By suppressing it, by running away from it, by ignoring it, or by philosophizing it, actually you do not experience freedom from that suffering. It is like something that you have become entangled with. And your constant run is making that stronger. Your constant fight with your emotion is making that very particular emotion strong. That is why we always share with people, or we share a philosophical insight, that every human being at any point in time live only in two states. At this current point of time, you are living either in a state of suffering or you are living in a state of no suffering. And there is no third state. So whether you're relating to your child or doing your work or having a conversation with your colleague or a friend, you are living that experience from a state of suffering or a state of no suffering. And the most important decision that one needs to make in life is, from which state do you want to live and experience life? And when I mean suffering here, I'm talking about any uncomfortable experience, inner experience. I'm talking about anger, fear, hurt, anxiety, loneliness, insecurity, depression, sadness, sorrow, guilt, regret. All these uncomfortable emotions are suffering states. At any point in time, you either move into these states and experience life. When you relate to people, when you do your work, when you're all by yourself, or you are in a space of no suffering, which could be calm, peace, love, joy, connection. These are beautiful states. Or you could be experiencing a transcendental states of a causeless joy and a causeless bliss. Or you could be experiencing expanded states in consciousness. These are all no suffering states. Your quality of your life does not depend on how much you have, what you have earned, does not depend on the position that you have in life, the power that you hold in life, or it does not depend on how much of wealth you have. It doesn't depend on any of these things. The quality of your life actually depends on which state you're living and experiencing life. Internally, if one is constantly living in a state of stress and fear and anxiety and or sadness, it is a very poor quality of life. And not only that, from that state, you actually cannot connect to people in your life. That state of suffering, if you have to use a microscope to see what it is, it actually separates you from everybody else. That state of suffering is a total engrossment with oneself. And from that state of disconnection, you have a very poor experience of life. A poor, meaningless, something that is tainted with a lack of purpose, that would be an experience of life.
A painful way to live.
Absolutely. And the problem is, Tom, nobody's conscious of it.
Right.
And nobody has taught us that it is extremely important to live free of suffering. I mean, the society is more focused on information and all that, but it is not focused on the inner experience. And we have lost touch with ourselves. We allow suffering states to build in our consciousness. That feeling of lack continues. We continue to experience that feeling of lack. We live in a constant state where you're comparing oneself with somebody else. You live in a state of insecurity. We live in a state of loneliness. And nobody has said it is important to walk out of these states. It's important not that you run out of these states or fear these states, but actually bring attention to these states, see it very clearly, observe it, and then walk out of those states. That becomes a very important part of learning for, I would say, everybody. And it'll be great if we can start off young.
In your experience with teaching people these things and helping them make this transition from suffering into non-suffering, what seems to be the critical obstacle? what has to happen in a human being for them to be able to make that transition?
First, Tom, we have a vision for external world, or a large part of them have a vision for what they should achieve, how much they should earn, probably some vision for one's health, probably a vision for one's relationship, not many, but few. But I believe that one must have a spiritual vision for one's inner state. You want to achieve, right? But from which state do you want to achieve? You want to be a stressed out achiever, or you want to be a fulfilled achiever? That becomes very important. You want to be a parent. From what state you want to parent your child? Which state? You want to be someone who is anxious all the time, or who's someone who experiences total connection with one's child as one goes through this responsibility of parenting? That becomes extremely important. What I feel is lacking is the way the society has trained us into making sure that we have a vision for our external life. We have not brought attention to having a vision for our internal state, which we call it as a spiritual vision, a vision for one's inner state. And when you have a vision for your inner state, what happens is there are going to be challenges. There are going to be problems in life. And every time you experience a challenge and you move into the space of suffering, your spiritual vision will actually allow you to step out of that suffering state and not allow to continue to being in that state. And that is what our followers do. They have a very clear vision for their inner state. They believe that they could be awakened achievers, they could be awakened partners, they could be awakened parents, they could be awakened leaders, and actually contribute so much to the role that they are playing. If they are awakened, awakened means not immersed in suffering, but actually the one who is wakeful, that is one who is free of suffering. If you have that vision, then it is not only the internal life that becomes peaceful and conflict-free, and it is a very beautiful experience to live life as you relate, as you do your work. But what happens is, even the external situations actually become free of conflict, become free of challenges. Actually, you would begin to see the challenges are dissolving. The problems that used to come so much and bombard at you, it is not there anymore that way. Mm-hmm. That inner conflict, once it ceases, the external life also becomes very peaceful.
Well, in a sense, I mean, I feel like we radiate the energy that affects our outer experience. I think about this a lot in terms of kindness. You know, I reached a conclusion a few years ago. I wish I lived in a place where more people were kind and more people say hello or smile at each other. And at some point decided, I'm not going to worry about what other people are doing. I'm going to be kind myself. I'm going to say hello. I'm going to smile. I'm going to help the woman carry her bags to her car or whatever it is. And what I began to realize is just that very intention and me taking those actions created such a difference in my quality of life. And I began to see kindness in other people that I wasn't seeing before. I began to experience life differently.
That's beautiful, actually. What I would also like to add is, in the realm of consciousness, Tom, when you are in a state of suffering, that is what you're signaling this vast field or fabric of consciousness. And then you draw chaos, you draw conflict, you draw disharmony into your life. And when you are experiencing no suffering states, when you're experiencing a beautiful state in your consciousness, a state of connection, actually, that is the signal you're sending out to this field of consciousness, that your life is actually open for harmony and order. At a deeper realm, as you said, there are energies, and the inner conflict actually manifests as more conflict in the outer world. That is why transformation in consciousness is so very essential, not only at the individual level, but even at the global level. Every crisis that we are looking at this point, the root of it is an individual's conflict. And if we are able to address that individual's conflict, allow large numbers of people to become and experience joy and expansion and awakening, then the crisis that we are seeing in the external world could dissolve. The crisis of the external world is not independent of the inner conflict which the individuals are experiencing. They're connected.
So where in your mind does the separation between the heart and the mind fit into all this? We've talked about the ten-headed king, right? And the way that state has been described to me in my world, the expression that we use is the committee of people in our head, and that we have to learn to quiet the committee and listen to our hearts. So I think we're very much mind-focused or brain-focused. And I've had other guests who we've talked about this, where if we can learn to make the transition from the mind to the heart, that's really what needs to happen. Or maybe the heart is the true self or the inner truth. What would you say about that?
That inner conflict that is there, Tom, the thing is, you can't run away from it. But instead, you need to bring attention to it. You should be able to see it very clearly. That this constant voice of, you know, you should not have done this, or this should not have happened to you, or you are like this. You're in a constant state of should have been or should not have been. That conversation or the inner dialogue that is happening within you, you need to bring attention to it. And it is only when you move into a space of quiet mind, that inner conflict is a state of unquiet mind, right? Mm-hmm. Which is constantly blaming, constantly judging. Actually, it is a state of self-centric, self-engrossment. If you're able to bring attention to it very clearly, that is when those voices become quiet. And when these voices become quiet, then you become a person capable of feeling. Your heart comes awake. You're able to experience connection. It is not about yourself alone. Your sense of self is expanded to include others. You include your family, you include your society, you include your friends, you include your colleagues, you include nature, you include earth. A state of connection where you begin to experience the other. It happens only when your inner conflict quietens. And that happens only in observation. And it has to become very deep, where you're able to see the intricacies of your mind, because all the time it is camouflaging. And most of the times you are engaged in it and you get carried away by it. All those judgments, all those blames, all those questionings, you get carried into it. But what needs to happen is you have to become a non-judgmental observer. It has to become a practice. It has to become a way of life for you to awaken an experience of connection in your heart. A connection where you begin to feel what the other is feeling. You begin to feel the other's experience of joy and celebrate. You begin to feel the other's experience of sadness, and you lend, pull out your arm to hold the other in sadness. So it is a state of feeling the other. Again, I would say not knowing and understanding the other, but connection as a state where you begin to feel what the other is actually going through in life.
Well, an example that I would give in my life where I've been able to experience this is the wounds that I have, the emotional wounds that I've experienced in my life. Until I shined a light on them and acknowledged them the way that you're talking about. I mean, I think I've always had compassion for other people to some degree, but doing my own work and processing my own emotions, acknowledging my own sadness, and ceasing to resist those emotional experiences gave me the ability to be with someone and experience an appropriate amount of their pain with them in order to be loving and compassionate and not so uncomfortable that I have to try to talk them through it or teach them how to not feel that way anymore or help them think their way. I didn't have to do that anymore. I could just be with them.
Absolutely, Tom. Actually, that state of compassion is very healing. It is very healing to the other. There is a field around everybody's heart. And it is just not limited to the physical body. The field is around us, I think 3 or 4 feet around us. And when you are in that state of compassion, what happens is the other person's field and your field actually become connected. And you are able to impact the way the other person experiences. And just as you beautifully put it, the more you know yourself, the more you can experience compassion towards the other. That is, the more you know your fears, you know your sadness, you know your insecurity, you know your loneliness, the more you know your states, you actually, compassion is born out of the insight that the other person's experiences are not different from yours. That is, when you experience fear and when the other experiences fear, it is the same fear. The experience is just the same. The way your body becomes tight, how the stomach muscles feel, the experience of it, it is not different at all. And that is why when you know yourself better, that is when you become a person capable of experiencing compassion towards the other, not otherwise. And compassion as such is a powerful It's a powerful tool for healing.
Mm. The field, the way you described the field around the heart just almost brought me to tears. It's a very beautiful thing, the thought of intersecting.
Absolutely, Tom, because we also kind of spend a lot of time with parents who are concerned about their younger children. And I've always seen that when a parent transforms, when an awakening happens in a parent's consciousness, and the way they are able to heal their children of all their emotions, all their inexperiences, it's truly amazing to see that.
Mm-hmm.
The understanding of this physical separation, that we are separate individual people, that has to slowly disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this realm, yeah, the way we see it, yes, we look as two different individuals. But in the realm of consciousness, it isn't like that.
The illusion of separation.
It is an illusion. It is one field. It is one fabric. It is just a flow.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to say that the opportunity to connect with you is an indication to me that I'm doing a good job of connecting with myself.
Beautiful, Tom.
I've enjoyed this so much. So I'm going to ask you the question that I ask every guest that I have. If there was a time in your life, Rita G, when the younger version of yourself, when she needed some support or a word of advice, at a particular time when maybe the suffering was more substantial than others, when would that have been, and what would you say to her?
I actually do not look back at life that way, Tom. There is no should not be for me. What I see is a flow. Because I know very clearly when we begin to engage in that thought of should not have been, then there is no end to it.
Mm.
So I would just say life was a flow. There were challenges. Bigger challenges, smaller challenges. And it would continue to be a flow. And I would say it is a beautiful flow. I mean, I would want everybody to take back this. That when I look at my body, there is no more should be or should not be. There is only the what is. When I look at my family, there is no more should be or should not be. All that is there. I look at my home, there is no more should be or should not be. Or what I'm doing definitely should be or should not be. I want everybody, if possible, to become an observer to life and experience a deeper sense of calm. A deeper sense of joy that actually radiates and flows.
So, and it's all about the practice of non-judgment.
Absolutely, Tom. And that conversation that starts off as should be or should not be, it doesn't end.
Mm-hmm.
It only is like, always gives birth to more children.
Mm.
More contexts, more situations. It is important that one weeds it out of one's consciousness.
Mm. So, Preeta G, any words that you would like to leave the listener with, or maybe a blessing of some kind, What would you like to say in conclusion to this conversation?
I would actually leave a blessing to every one of them listening to this conversation. May you live a life free of suffering. May you live in peace. May you live whole. May you experience joy. Sarvesham Swastir Bhavatu. Sarvesham Shantir Bhavatu. Sarvesham Purnam Bhavatu. Sarvesham Mangalam Bhavatu. Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you for this opportunity to connect to your audience. And I truly appreciate all that you are doing with this medium to reach out to so many people and help out so many lives.
And likewise, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Authenticity proudly supports the iSpeak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit iSpeakMedia.org.
There you go. Preeta G, what a great conversation. Not gonna lie, I broke down to her after we stopped recording. I got completely caught up in the conversation. It was just such a good feeling to talk to her. Almost like talking to an angel or me. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe that's why I broke down. I don't know, but I felt very connected to her. And I'm just, again, so grateful to have had the opportunity to spend the time and share this conversation with her. I hope you enjoyed it. So, if you did, please leave a rating or a review, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, wherever you listen, whatever they let you do, whether it's like, follow, review, please do it. Every little bit helps. And if you really like the show and you're interested in helping support me and the show so I can do more work like this, please consider becoming a patron on Patreon. More and more, I'm going to be releasing content that isn't available anywhere else. Again, thank you to Gina Maffa. Want to thank the show's sponsors, The Manor and Windrose Recovery, for Escape Vortex. Thank you to the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. Visit thepathtoauthenticity.com, where you can find 20 questions for Preeta G, a blog post. And visit us on Clubhouse. There's a link in the show notes for the podcast club. I'm doing more and more there. More and more of the 20 questions episodes. At noon on weekdays, noon Eastern, that is. If you have questions or comments, You can call 561-247-4757, leave a voicemail, may even use it on the show. If you think you know someone who will enjoy this episode, share a link. All right, folks. Thank you. Thank you for coming and listening. Thank you for coming back. If you've been here before, thank you for being a part of this community. I love doing this stuff. Thanks for your support. Have a great week. Be nice. This episode was brought to you by Equivox. For digital marketing or web design services, visit Equivox.com.